Lee Davey here with the fabulous Daniel Negreanu.
Fabulous. That's fabulous. The first. I like that. Fabulous.
Imagine you're the CEO of PokerStars. You may well be, but imagine you are the CEO of PokerStars. We just had this amazing event. What do we do with it now?
So the most important thing going forward with this event is the goal for this event was to create essentially, you know, well, not necessarily 300, but like a good number of moneymaker-like stories that can pierce mainstream attention, right? So going forward, what's going to be super important is leveraging all the things that we did right, right? So, you know, we've done such a great job with the hype leading up to it, with the little videos of the guy from, the Bronx and all these feel-good stories. Mm-hmm. So now it'll be important to take that, take it mainstream, because the poker community, if we want it to grow or sustain itself, if we continue to just focus on retention, which is good, that's, you know, all fine and dandy, but that pool eventually shrinks if you don't bring in new people. So one of the ways to do that is to go, you know, do things that will get mainstream attention. So mm-hmm. that will be the focus, is really, you know, whether it's as simple as, you know, getting, if someone does well here, you know, getting them on Ellen or getting them on some talk shows, getting them into some more mainstream stuff to tell their story. That's kind of what would my focus would be with it.
What about beyond that? What about this event? Like, you know, the Colossus happened, 22,373 people, I think it was. Are you cashing it? Just want to put that brag in it. but then the next year they have like 19,000 and everyone's like, whoa, this is fucking shit.
Right.
I mean, where does this go? Because it's right up there now. Where can it
go? So that's the danger, right? So, you know, we were looking at this event and said, oh, if we get 700-800, that's a huge success. Mm. Like, massive. We get over 1,000, right? So just like with anything, you know, anytime you have an event, the more often you have it, the sort of like less prestige or less specialness it has to it. So if we were going to follow up with another one this year, because I don't know that that's guaranteed, there's been no talk of it necessarily, you'd have to find a way to just like, you know, piggyback what we did last year and somehow try to make it like, you know, make people really feel like they have to get a platinum pass, you know, if we're going to do that again. Now, you look at the investment from the company, it's a big one.
Yeah,
you know, 9 million plus. Like, it's 9 million direct, but there's also a lot of money going around, like, just putting on the event and things like that. So, you know, I think the company looks at it as a huge success in terms of, like, the community back. Like, everyone's like, how can you hate on this thing? I mean, you know, we're just giving away $9 million, right? Whether they do exactly that or something different in the future, I'm not sure. But, I mean, obviously from, you know, the community's perspective, I think we'd love to see this every year. Mm. You know, I just don't know if it's necessarily feasible.
Yeah, good point. I had dinner with Eric Kollreiser last night, and Eric's the type of guy, I'm sure you know, He captures the crowd and he's got a lot of stories to tell. And he was telling one about when he was the PR guy for Bill Gates and how Bill Gates needed someone to put a piece of paper under him every now and then so he would say the right thing for the company, right? And as soon as he was saying that, I was thinking of you. Because whenever someone says to me, who do you like to interview? What type of people do you like to interview? I like to interview Daniel. Why? Because he answers every single question I give him. But then I started to think, is that a PR issue as well? Now, you are a very, very smart guy, right? So for the people outside in who thinks, well, Daniel just answers anything he likes, how does it really work with your understanding of the PR and the PokerStars kind of line and that kind of thing?
I always tell people when they do an interview, it's like there's literally no question that's off limits. You want to know what color boxers I have? It's fine. If that's interesting to you, I'm down to talk about it. As far as, like, you know, issues related to company and poker and stuff like that, part of why I'm able to answer a lot of these questions is because these are questions I've asked myself and I educate myself. Typically I take a trip to the Isle of Man, which is 3 to 4 days, and just talk to everyone in every department, so I understand why the decisions, the reason behind certain decisions that we're making. Some of them I'm going to agree with and some of them are going to, you know, I'm going to think like, well, that was stupid, let's, you know, fix that for next year. But at least I find myself equipped and prepared. Like, I once talked to Joey Ingram on his podcast and he's like, well, you know, he was trying to get me, you know, and he's like, you just have all the answers. I'm like, yes, because I actually spend time, you know, thinking about these things and understanding them at a deeper level. And when I don't, if I don't have an answer to a question, I'm more than willing to say, I don't know. You know, maybe that would be something that, you know, you'd have to ask somebody else. But I don't mind the tough questions. Like, I prefer them in a sense because I get it. You know, everyone in poker, like, typically thinks, unfortunately, they think, like, what is best for me? Right? Like, that's how a poker player thinks. Like, they run a business, it's their business. What they lacked, what they fail to see sometimes is, okay, for my business to function at its best, the people organizing the event have to profit. The online site or the company, the venue, like, if it's not working for the entire, if it's not a win-win-win for everyone, they don't exist, which means you lose. And I think typically as poker players, we're very self-focused on, like, what matters for us. And I think that I'm uniquely qualified after 20 years to understand, like, okay, cool, I got my bottom line, but, like, they got to make theirs too.
Hmm. I was wondering that. I when it comes to PR and doing the right thing by the company, are you treated differently internally than the other Team PokerStars pros, or are you just, you're treated the same, but you've got your experience and you use your experience.
I think one of the cool things I love about working with the company, and this is messaged internally, is like they want the pros to be able to say what the hell they want to say. If they curse, there's no repercussion. If I say the F word, it's not like, oh my God, you know, that's, you don't get reprimanded for that. Mm-hmm. You know, interview, whatever it is, having a take, it allows you to be authentic. The last thing they want is a bunch of pros who are all robots, who just like say, yes, the company is doing fantastic, we are up this year, and it's great for poker. No, if you have issues with something, say so. If you don't really love something, we have the freedom to do that, because it allows for that authenticity. And I don't know that it is possible that I'm treated differently in that regard. I'm not sure what other people hear, but I've always appreciated that sometimes I'm going to speak vocally about a decision that's made that I didn't agree with. But also, like, what company do you work for that doesn't happen? Mm-hmm. If you work at Microsoft or whatever, and you work within the company, they might make a decision to do something, you don't agree with it. Yeah. Doesn't mean you're like, hate the company, because you agree with the majority of their decisions.
Mm, no, I totally get that. I'm going to talk to you about wedding lists.
All right.
Okay, so, as you know, I'm kind of leader of a movement of people who don't drink alcohol, and one of the things that they find when they move out of that kind of zone, they don't drink alcohol anymore, and they live in a world where everybody does, they experience like severe loneliness. I see it in poker a lot. I've been talking to a lot of poker players in Malta, and it came up as a theme that poker players are really kind of lonely. I've got a couple of questions for you, and it is related to wedding lists, right?
Fire away.
One is like, what was the time when you were the loneliest? Two, how do you select your friends, or do they select you? And three, what qualities of people are you going to have on your wedding list?
First one, so I go in order.
What was the time you were the loneliest?
It sounds so rare, because I'm very good at being I like my alone time, so I'm really comfortable being alone. But I would say that what I noticed was actually in Barcelona. Was it this year? I think it was this year. Yeah, I think it was Barcelona. I remember going, and I was there for 2 weeks, and partly by choice and partly just, you know, it's how it worked out. I literally never ate a single meal with another human being.
Right.
So while I was at Barcelona and meeting fans and doing all that kind of stuff, in my alone time, I never went out for drinks one night, you know, socialized. Mm-hmm. I just ate all my meals in my room, or I went to a restaurant completely by myself. I literally never sat with somebody for a meal. And I was like, wow, that's kind of weird. You know, that's kind of awkward. But it didn't actually have an effect on me that was really negative, because I'm just introspective like that. And I was like, oh, that's interesting. I'm going to make sure next time I don't do that. Next time I'll get out more.
So it wasn't a conscious choice, and it wasn't a subconscious choice that you thought yourself, I was trying to stay away from people? What was it?
No, it was, you know, partly, like, I mean, I'm very hot, I'm a hockey nerd. So partly, like, when I'm out of a tournament, and I'm an introvert, too. I don't know if people really understand the concept of, like, really what that means. When I'm doing my stuff in the, all day, dealing with fans, dealing with this, taking pictures, all that kind of stuff, and I'm busted at a tournament, like, I just want to go to my room and be alone and just do hockey research and do my things. And I found myself doing that every night pretty much. And, like, all of a sudden I realized, I'm like, wow, I haven't, like, really hung out with anyone the entire time. And that's not healthy, right? Like, I know that I'm an introvert, but I still need social interaction just like any human being. So that was probably one where, not in a negative sense like loneliness, but, like, there was one other time, actually. Oh, wow. This was another really good one. And I wrote a bunch of blogs about it. I'll see if I can find them. They were fabulous. I did a cameo in the film Wolverine.
I remember. Yeah.
It was supposed to be a three-day thing. It ended up being like almost 2 weeks. And I was in Sydney, Australia, totally by myself. No real friends there. I didn't hang out with anyone in the cast. And I remember just like walking every day to like go get food and just seeing people in the street. And I felt so connected to like the... You know, like the guy who's homeless on the street, and I just looked at him every day, and it was just a surreal moment. I remember being really introspective and writing a lot, and I wrote like 3 or 4 blogs about it. But I find like there's a lot of value in maybe not loneliness per se, but like being alone in a real, you know, severe, in a very distinct way like that.
You can look at it as a positive instead of just a negative.
Well, you learn from it. Yeah, like, well, do I like this? What am I missing? So, for example, I'm a very self-sufficient guy. I'm very alone, like, most of the time. I like being alone. Then the question, like, what am I sacrificing? What am I giving up? What am I not getting that I need as a human being, right? Mm-hmm. And you start to see that more when you have longer periods of doing that.
Also, being having that introvert part of your being, is there also a part of it that is a little bit like, you know, I prefer to have more deep, meaningful conversations. I'm not really into too much surface-level talk.
No, I like service level
talk. You like service level
talk? Yes. It's funny you say that, because it's part of a past relationship. But, like, I have my assistant, Joel. I have a couple. One, he comes over every day. We talk for, like, an hour, 2 hours about politics, about this, about that. We talk about content. rather than like, how are your kids?
How are your family?
Like, those are very deep, heavy conversations, and those can be very draining for me. Not that I'm opposed to them, but typically I'm much more, you know, surfacey kind of conversation.
And how have you built up your friendships? Does your energy attract people? Do people come and get you, and you become their friends? It just naturally or organically happen? How does it work?
Yeah, I don't make a ton, you know, and it's funny because I just made two friends yesterday at the beach. I was there, and some Indian guy who didn't even know the PokerStars event was going on was there with his. He was on his honeymoon, and he's like, "Daniel, you know, he's a big fan or whatever." Normally, that is like, not I wouldn't say a turnoff, but it's not something I'm going to hang out with.
Yeah.
But I really liked his energy and his vibe and her, and I bought them a drink, and then we hung out, and you know, we exchanged numbers, and probably going to see him at the comedy show tonight. So that just happened organically with her and I. But over the years, that's one of the issues where, like, part of what I got out of, like, when I did the Choice Center course was realizing that most of the people around me either work for me, you know, or have been friends for a very long time, and I didn't let a lot of new people in because most of my relationships were 5 minute long.
Yeah.
Like, hey, how's it going? Really nice to meet you, but like, not a lot of depth there. So, and part of it was because, frankly, a lot of people wanted to a relationship with me for personal gain in some way. Either they wanted to borrow money, they wanted to elevate their status, they wanted a PokerStars deal or whatever like that. So I was much more at bay with people, like I didn't really trust as much. And when I opened that up, you know, I was able to change that, you know. Now I've made a lot of new friends. Like on New Year's, I had a bunch of people that actually, oddly enough, from my previous relationship, most of her family is friends with me. I'm not friends with her in any way, shape, or form, you know, at all. Like, we don't talk, but her twin sister and her other sisters and friends, like, I developed good friendships with them. So that's part of, like, people I would hang out with now.
Well, it's good that they continue, because very often in a situation like that, it's not just the two people that...
Well, they're upset because, like, she's upset because her family doesn't really like her new guy.
Right.
Because he's kind of a greasy douchebag.
Right.
He just is. And he works for the company, which is really stupid. But he does. He works for PokerStars. So crazy. He's a real greaseball, real scumbag. But he just is. I'm serious. So, yeah, she's, you know, but it is what it is. Like, but I just looked at it independently of that. I'm like, I'm going to have friendships with people I made friendships with.
Yeah. I like that. Okay, so in my first wedding, because I've been married twice, when I did the wedding list and created it and all that kind of stuff, we did the wedding, I looked back afterwards and said, why the hell did I invite all these family members who I don't even know and don't even care, and I left a lot of my friends out, right? Given what you just said about not really letting a lot of people in, you know, weddings are typically these things where society puts pressure on us to, like, have a big fandangle thing. What are the qualities of the type of people that are going to end up on your wedding list? What are you thinking about it?
So the first thought about that, which is interesting that you say that, is, like, her and I, we're very similar, and we're both like, we don't want stress. We don't want a stressful wedding. I don't give a shit what color the napkins are.
Right.
You know what I mean? We're going to have, we want to make it simple. She wants a beach wedding. You know, want, like, you know, the house there, just like all, like, you know, on the beach. It's a very, very simple type wedding. As far as people, what we've been working on for the list is we'll start with groupings. You know, people, you know, you got family, you got friends, you got, you know, old friends from Choice Center, got her, you know, her friends and whatnot. So we're going to make a big list, you know, of everyone that we possibly could want to have there. And maybe that gets to, it's already like 175 or something. Maybe it gets to like 500. And then look at, okay, who are the must-haves?
Yeah.
And then we start from there. And then if we have a number that we want to hit, then we look at it from that. But as far as qualities of people, both of our families are not very big. So that's 20 people tops, right? And then obviously the closest people to me, the closest people to her, like, they get priority. And past that, the real question is going to be for me, which is the difficult part, is how do I approach my poker world connections in terms of who gets invited and who doesn't? Because, like, that's the harder thing about a list is, like, who do you offend? Right?
Yeah.
So obviously someone like Phil Ivey or Jason Mercier, you know, we have friendships outside of poker, you know, they're going to be there. But, like, what about people I just play with? You know, what about guys I play the high rollers with who I like, enjoy their company, but if I invite them, well, then don't I have to invite all of them? Right? You know what I'm saying? So it's like...
And work as well.
What's that?
Your work colleagues.
Right, exactly.
Stars,
like,
you know, it's
so, yeah, because we have our hands in a lot of different, you know, worlds or whatever, then you sort of have to, like, make sure you... But ultimately, like, we're going to make this wedding about us. Part of what I talked to her about was, like, you know, for the food, I was like, listen, it's a wedding, it's our day, right? Like, you know, what are we going to offer for food? And it's like, well, we're both vegan. So if you want chicken and you want beef or whatever, bring it, you know? Or, like, if you want a dead animal, go down the street to an In-N-Out and bring it or whatever. But, like, we're going to offer really good vegan food. It's not like, it's different because everyone eats vegan food. Everyone eats some of it.
And they love it. They'll love it when you put it on the front.
But everyone will eat some of that. Not everyone will eat a dead cow or a fish. So if you just imagine you just served fish only. I'm like, oh, I hate fish. Even some people eat meat and hate fish. But with a vegan diet, like, everyone eats vegetables sometimes and fruits and stuff. So we're going to make it kind of like how we want it. And if people don't like it, then
so be it. Well, I hope it turns out to be a fabulous day for you, Daniel. Yeah. I'm going to ask you some random questions. When the young lady behind me starts going, shut the fuck
up. Yeah.
You let
good.
Me know, right? All right. Keep going.
Oh, this is random.
Oh, you need your glasses.
Yes, that's all good. All right. What expense catches you by surprise every year? What expense catches me by surprise every year? I'd say hotel bills, probably.
Hotel bills?
Because I don't really look until the end of the year, and I'm like, holy shit.
Because somebody does it for you.
Well, my assistant does, and then I look at what I spent on, because I always like to stay in a suite and be comfortable and whatever. Yeah. And sometimes you're like, I paid $1,000 a night for that place? That wasn't worth it. So that
get back to those homeless guys in Sydney.
Yeah. What is the most important duty you perform on a regular basis? Duty. Right now, it's very, very clear. And that is dealing with my fiance and waking up every morning with this distinct goal of making her as happy as I possibly can.
Oh, sweet.
That's like a duty for me, for sure.
I should do that duty.
Yeah. What was the worst year of my life? What was the worst year of my life? I don't know if I would call it... Like, I haven't really had a lot of bad years. I've been pretty blessed. But I'd say the year 2000, not say it was the worst, but it was like a transitional year for me where I wasn't really focused at the poker table. I was drinking, I was partying, whatever. I had some money from 99 that I built up, and I sort of went broke and blew it all being just an idiot. So, but I always, as you know, like I look at something negative like that, and I'm like, what was the learning? And I was like, it was huge. It was hugely important for the trajectory of my life. So I'm like, no, I'm going to work my ass off now. And we're gonna get it right this time. Because I saw other people do that. The Huck Seeds of the world, the Lee Salems, like guys that were like always in and out of money, you know? And I was like, am I going to be like that? Mm-hmm. Or am I going to like actually have a foundation and get this right? So it was the worst from like a financial perspective and that, but like...
Turned out
I mean, I had fun.
But it turned out to be one of the most educational.
Yes, exactly.
Okay, I get it.
Cool. Finish this projection. If someone knew me properly, they would understand that... At the core, I have a very generous heart, and that I feel way more comfortable being a giver than a taker in all aspects. Like, and I set my life up that way, where like people that work for me, they get paid way more than they're supposed to, and they know that, and that's how I prefer things. Mm. Some people look at that and they focus on like, well, you're being taken advantage of, you're overpaying. I'm like, I'd rather overpay because I come from abundance, and that's how I live my life. So I just would say like. Typically a generous heart where I want other people to succeed.
I like it. I see that in you.
Yeah. What is the furthest you have pushed yourself physically? I would say I did the Shortcut to Shred about a year and a half ago.
Shortcut to Shred?
Yeah, it was like a workout, 6-week workout, and I did it to the T, where I wrote down, I made a spreadsheet of literally every food that I ate. I counted my nuts and I weighed them. I'm like, that's 9 almonds.
Whoa, which nuts? Those like nuts?
Almonds.
Nuts.
I would weigh my spinach. I'm like, okay, 60 grams of spinach. So I had spreadsheets and I followed the diet to a T, and I was by far, it was about a year and a half ago, I guess, or two or not, I was in the best shape of my life by far. So we're probably going to do something like that soon again.
Well, especially because we didn't get married.
Yeah, exactly. We're going to do it together. What is the highest praise you have received? The highest praise I received, it was actually at Choice Center. Well, it was Nick Binger. And he got me. I was bawling. He got me good. He said something to me like, he says, the world needs more fathers like you in it, and you're going to be a great father. And I didn't have any kids. I wasn't, in the realm of that. And it's just like, because I really realized in the moment, like, I do want to have kids, and I do want to be a father. And he just said it from such a, like, humble, like, real place that he floored me with it. Yeah.
Sweet. You'd be a good dad.
He got me good. What is the worst weather you have experienced? That's got to be Toronto. Back in the day, shoveling snow in the driveway and just being stuck in there. That's why one of the reasons we moved to Vegas, where it's a warmer climate.
Yeah. I just keep going.
What is your negative inner voice most saying to you? My negative inner voice is most saying to me, like, for example, if I'm reading comments on the internet, I want to go fucking buck wild. I want to rip these motherfuckers to shreds sometimes. Like, I want to say, like, I want to go, you motherfucker, I'll put you in a wheelchair eating out of a feeding tube for the rest of your life. How about that? Or when they call Amanda a gold digger. Like, when they come after her, I start to go, motherfucker. Like, I have all these thoughts. I actually write them out. And I'm like, okay, erase. Delete that one. Just let's not go there, right? So that's the one. Where it's like, then you got to realize, like, let it go. But, like, it's so easy to rip them back. But then I'm just, like, in the circle of the negativity.
Yeah.
And the truth is, 90% of the comments have been positive, which is good.
I like it.
This is a cool idea. I'm just getting the cards. What is the highest price you would pay for great sex? A wedding ring. I would pay for a wedding ring, because if it's really that great sex, which it is, by the way, then I would be willing to marry her, which is what I'm doing. So essentially, I guess it works out to about half my net worth.
Your net worth. I once bought a very expensive engagement ring, only because I was having dinner with my friends just before I was going to buy it. I told them how much I was going to spend, and they told me how much all they spent. I was like, oh, shit.
Here we go. What is true personal freedom? For me, real freedom is living a life in integrity, which means like all the things that I say that I want to do, I find a way to do them, you know, like where I have the freedom to do them. I don't feel like, well, I can't do this. If it's something that I really, really want in life, I have the ability to get it and achieve it. And there's many people in the world that don't have that right now, you know, that people that would actually like to be free to do whatever they choose to do, and they're not.
Can you remember a time in your life when you realized that you were out of line of integrity? I know it happens to me sometimes.
Of course. Yeah. That's the thing about integrity. It's like, so the goal is like, you know, the four agreements, which is very, very, you know, there's simple rules in life, and one of them is do your best, which means you're going to falter. Sometimes I'm going to tell someone I'll be there at 1 o'clock and be like, oh my God, I totally forgot, and show up at 1:30. Mm. That doesn't really happen to me very often, but it's a thing that can happen. So that's a breach of integrity, however small or big, right? You know, and there's been plenty of time in my life. I was married once, you know, so I got married and I said, you know, till death do us part and all that kind of stuff. And 2.5 years later, it was we part and we ain't dead. You know what I mean? So, sure.
Should have been there.
Yeah.
Is she waving at me yet?
What's that? No, not yet. We're good. Okay, she said maybe last one. What weakness will get in your way if you don't address it? Yeah, for me, it's similar to the common thing. It's just like compensity to be judgmental of people. And also when someone being condescending to me, it just bringing out a ferocious amount of arrogance from me to just come back at them hard. I was always the shortest in my school, and part of, you know, my mouth, and I would fight. I fought. Like, if people came at me, I fought. And now it's a different version of fighting. I'm not fighting with my fists, but if you come at me hard, like me, I realize it's just not worthwhile for me to get involved in that, because it is certainly a weakness, but that is my first compulsion, is to tear that person apart. You're trying to come at me? You're trying to take what I have, if you will? All right, I can come back at you. But I've been so good about that, because I've had haters for so long, where I'm used to it. And the only time it gets really difficult is when they're just literally lying, like just making up shit out of nowhere that is completely untrue, where I'm like, you know. But the thing is, you're in a sort of a lose-lose, because you don't respond, then people believe it as fact. When you do respond, they're like, well, why are you being so defensive about it? Mm. Right? So it kind of corners you a little bit in those spots. But I've learned to just, you know, be who I am, and people don't like me, they probably suck anyway.
I do have a counter question on that. I'm the same as you. Like, I was always taught that if somebody gets in your face when you're younger and they want to do you harm, then you've got to do them harm back very quickly, or before they do you harm. And someone recently called me a hack here, right? And it hurts, and my initial reaction is, I want to smack this guy.
You want to be like, look at your crap.
But then you have to swallow it. I'm interested, as your status grows, your wealth grows, your status, your standing, and everything that you own and stuff, what happens to that little part of the ego? Does it grow and get worse, or do you get more humble?
I found that, like, you know, for most people, right, as it grows, so the ego grows with it, right? Mm-hmm. But that often, either you're going to have a moment in your life where you're going to be introspective and go, okay, hold on, who do I really want to be? And luckily for me, I did a lot of personal work and reading, and, you know, I did the Choice Center course years ago, and it allowed me to sort of, like, get in touch with when that's happening. So now I've actually, I would say that, like, humility has become a lot more easy for me. Like, I can handle these guys talking about, oh, you suck now, you're no good, or whatever. I'm like, oh, whatever. You know, you're partly right. Maybe I'm not as good as I was. And I can look at that and be like, okay, well, why are they saying this? So I have compassion. When people come at me like this, I think to myself, man, what's this guy going through? Like, why does he care so much to, like, hate on me? You know?
When you're on your own, there's no one there, none of your staff, nobody, you're just there, you're lying in bed, and you're thinking that, holy shit, it's all coming together, I'm just about to marry someone I really love, I could potentially have that family because I'm not getting any younger. How does that feel?
Exciting. Really, really exciting. Like, we lay in bed, and we're like, we're just so ridiculous now, we just keep talking, I love you so much. Like, I never used to even say that very much, but it's like, we hug, we hold, we're always touching, it's like, we're super excited because, like, you know, for many years, she was always my dream girl, you know? And then I was always looking for someone that was somewhat like her instead of her because, you know, we split. Mm. And now I'm just super excited about, like, the change in trajectory of my life. You know, there's so many different things. Like, I'm opening up to being a father, to having her be a part of my life forever and stuff like that. So it's just a feeling of like giddiness, really.
All right, Daniel, thanks as always. I loved it.